On this edition of the Stories to Tell podcast, our special guest is Carolyn Meyer. I found our conversation to be truly inspiring as she talks about reinventing herself in her 80s and how that has resulted in her performing in solo shows and telling stories around the world in front of live audiences. And it all started with walking into an improv class in Albuquerque.
Well, it wasn't a decision. It was sort of an evolution. I have a loft in a downtown building, and on the ground floor is a little black box theater where they were doing improv. And I remember improv from the 1950s, Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And I always thought it was a fascinating process. Well, so I started going downstairs to attend these performances and, you know, all these young people up on stage doing crazy stuff. And then they announced that they were going to have classes. And I thought, I think I'll sign up and take a class. Well, of course, I was the age of the grandparent of the kids in the class, including the instructor who was young enough to be my grandson.
Right, right.
And I found I didn't have any particular gift for it. But that didn't stop. And I was quite forthright in explaining to them that they were not going to treat me like a grandma and always cast me as that. That I, if I want to be a 14-year-old boy, I will damn well better a 14-year-old boy.
Good for you.
So I stood up for myself on that. But I was really scared getting out, the first time in front of an audience.
I had no
theater experience. I'd never, not since I was in a Mother Goose play in third grade or something, something like that. And so the classes were fine, but actually getting up in front of an audience was very scary at first. What I found was that there's one of the processes in improv. The audience will suggest clues. They'll give you something to work with.
Yeah, orange next Tuesday or something.
Yes, and I can immediately start with a story that has to do with going shopping for oranges on Tuesday. And I will make up a little story just on the spot.
Wow.
Then the real improvers will take that story and play with it. But I was the one who was really good at cooking up something just kind of on the fly.
Almost the setup or something.
Yeah,
okay.
So
all right.
I'm pretty good at that. At some point, then someone suggested that I might want to go and try out for, what was the thing? It was the Liars Club. Barry Simon was running that. And I was supposed to go for an audition, but I got screwed up on the way there. No surprise.
The directions.
That time it was the bus system.
No. Yeah.
So I was late getting there, and I met Barry, and I explained how I had to kept calling the bus company to, what's the matter with your bus system? They're not stopping. And finally, a bus stopped, and the bus driver said, "We got a call that there's a really angry woman out on the corner of Central and University, and we're to pick her up." I told that story to Barry. He says, "Never mind the audition, you're doing it." So I was doing the Liars Club for a while and found out that I'm a really good liar.
So what was the Liars Club all about? What were you doing?
There would be three storytellers, potential liars. Two are telling the truth and one is lying.
Oh.
And the audience has to figure out which one is the liar. And they always believed me. I mean, I look like this little Sunday school teacher who couldn't possibly be doing the things that she just said she did. So, and then we went from there into the Dirty Liars, where the raunchy blue side of me blossomed.
Oh. It
was kind of a surprise to everybody, but not to me. And it kind of went on from there. The next thing I knew, I was doing 5-minute stand-up at Bosie Brothers down on Gold Street in downtown Albuquerque.
So a stand-up comedian type act?
Kind of, yeah. Doing that.
Wow.
And one thing leading to another with this. And at some point, I took it into my head to try doing podcasts, and I did some of those.
And they're very good.
Well, the thing with them is I'm much better if I have an audience to feed off of. And just a guy behind the camera wasn't doing it. So there's the, the energy was missing in those, I felt.
Yes.
And then I tried, and I can't remember how this idea came to me, of putting some of these little short stories together into making a show out of it. And so my first solo show was Don't Call Me Young Lady, because that's a particular gripe of mine. And somehow I could find other things to spin off of that for about an hour. And here I am down at the Cell Theater in Fusion down on First Street near Lomas. When was that? Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. I had that show and it opened and it ran and it ran and we kept getting more Sunday afternoons out of it.
Wow.
And I just had a great time doing that. Then, okay, I think I'm onto something here. Let's try something else. So I did another show, The Old White Lady Tells It, The Making and Unmaking of a Racist. And this was based on how I grew up in central Pennsylvania in a very conservative family.
Gotcha. Sure.
And where racism was the norm. And how various chapters of my life unfolded that I finally figured that one out and how to get out of that. And then that opened and then COVID closed.
Yeah.
It, and that was the end of that. We did a film of it and they projected it on the side of outdoors in the side of the building. There I am 15 feet tall, which was, you know, kind of fun for a few minutes. see myself and, you know. Larger than life.
Yeah, literally larger than life, yeah.
And then recently I thought, yeah, I got some other ideas I want to work on here. The interesting thing here that I finally learned, I've always, because I've written so many books, I've written and had published 60 books for children and young adults, ranging from how-to to historical novels. So I've known for many years how to work with an editor and how to accept direction and advice, when to know, okay, this one I'm sticking with because I really believe this is the way it should be.
Oh.
About 10% of the time, I let my ego run.
Unchecked. Stand it up on stage.
Well, you got to have something going
yes, you
on
do.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been working with Barry Simon, who was my first director with the Liars Club. Barry has a great deal of experience in theater and in film. And he and I, somehow or other, know just how to work together. And I remember a few months ago, I called him. I said, I got a new show here. And he said, okay. I said, do you want to read it? He said, no, I want you to read it to me. And I'll take notes. So he comes over to my place and I read him this thing. And he hasn't written a single note. And I'm a little suspicious about this. And finally, I get to the end of it. And he said, I don't think you know what your story is here.
Mm.
Start over. That was, I think, in November. Maybe the first 10 minutes are good, but you need to do a lot of work on the rest of it, which, of course, is not what I want to hear.
I was going to say, how did that hit you?
Well, in the pit of the stomach,
yeah.
Of course, but I trust him.
There
I trust
go.
Him. Mm-hmm. And so I started over again. I think I am now on draft number 12, and we're opening in 2 weeks.
Oh.
If he changes it again, I may say no.
Oh.
I think we have to be there now. But working with someone like that, whom you respect, and being able to accept what he's telling you and work with that, it's very important.
Yeah, and I think you hit on the right term there, where you trust.
Yeah.
Because you're putting, I imagine this, when you originally sat down with him and says, hey, I got another one. Here's my story, and he wasn't reacting. And you had probably thought about this for a very long time.
Yes.
And it's not like you're telling somebody else's story. I'm sure this is your own.
Exactly.
And then he's sitting there saying, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
That would be hard.
Yeah, and he doesn't go out of his way to be diplomatic either.
Oh.
I mean, he just tells it straight.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. So.
Well, what is the, do you, with 12 weeks to go, you said?
Oh, no, two.
2 weeks to go.
2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Do you have the name defined for it?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We went through multiple names
for it. I bet.
And the name is Motherhood. What a bitch. Naturally, it's going to be playing on Mother's Day.
You'll have them lined up around the block.
I hope so.
Oh, my gosh.
It opens 2 weeks before that. So it's April 28th, May 5th with the Cinco de Mayo. But I don't have a particular connection with that. And then a Mother's Day.
Okay.
Come and bring your mom.
Between the eyes with that title of that, which is awesome.
My children are kind of amazed by all of this too. Ma, what are you doing?
I bet. Have they come to see any of your shows?
My oldest son is coming on Mother's Day to see it. He has a fairly unflattering part in it.
Oh, is that right?
Well, it's the time he got his mother stoned. We'll talk about that another time, perhaps.
Oh. Does he know he's got a small...
No.
He does.
No, well, he knows he got his mother stoned, but he doesn't know that's going to be one of the stories.
Oh, I love that. Wow. When you're on stage, are you going to be looking for him? When that segment of your show comes up, are you going to be looking for him in the audience, or are you going to purposely look away?
Or see if he's sneaking out.
Yeah, exactly. So... Before we leave that, so we have the name, and where is it going to be again?
At Fusion, the Cell. That's first in Lomas, just south of Lomas.
And it opens? It
opens on April 28th. That's a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Wow. Good for you. I wish you all the best with it. I bet it's just going to be a home run. You have such an infectious personality. And just in the short time that we've had a chance to sit down here and get to know each other, you're nothing but fun stories. You just come out with it. So I imagine a show is going to be amazing.
Well, I hope so. I really found this, and this was a new discovery for me, because I was always a very shy kid. And my mother was, you know, she was beautiful and popular and, you know, everything that I was not. And that, of course, that's one of the issues that I deal with in this show. But how I then became who I am and discovered that I like being in front of an audience.
And how that's a problem, and I think so many people can relate to, is really, I think, discovering who you are. Because it sounds like when you were growing up that perhaps you're not, you've almost reinvented yourself. I think you've used that term when I was listening to some of your shows, how as you got older in life, you went through that. What allowed you to do that?
I think probably some outside events that propelled that. When my husband died, I'd been married to him for 30 years, and he died in 2015. And that's when I first went downstairs, started going downstairs to the box and hanging out and watching the improv, getting involved in the improv, then it evolves into doing stand-up and storytelling. And all this is brand new. I haven't written any more books since then. I've just been doing this stuff. It's totally different.
That's amazing.
Well, I like to say I got my start when I was writing books for young people, and I would be invited to do school visits and go, especially middle school. That was a particular target audience for many of my books. And they get all these seventh graders and put them in an auditorium or a gymnasium or something, and I'm supposed to talk about books. If I can keep a bunch of seventh grade boys actually paying attention to me, I must have some small gift here.
Right.
And a couple of times these boys would come up to me afterwards and say, "You ought to be a comedian."
Oh.
And of course, at the time, I thought, bosh.
Right, right.
What do you know? But they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself yet.
The Moth is a very popular live storytelling event and podcast that takes place around the world. Ever wonder what it would be like to perform in front of so many people?
one of the great things that happened is the Moth. Do you know about the Moth? They're on public radio.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the Moth was in Albuquerque 7 years ago.
Oh, I love the Moth show. It's a wonderful podcast.
Yeah, they do. And they were in Albuquerque, and I submitted a pitch, and they ignored me.
Oh.
Boo, boo.
Yeah.
Well, how long ago? I can't remember how long ago that was. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I get a call from them saying, we just looked over your pitch line, and we'd like to work with you. Oh, okay.
Oh, I bet.
So we started, they assigned me one of their people who's, you know, a producer or somebody who works with one lovely woman. And so we worked on this. And boy, you better be able to take directions and suggestions.
That's what I understand.
Because they are extremely picky. And there is, I won't say there's a formula, but there's an arc to be followed. And, you know, it is not just a casual anecdote. It's got to have a point. It's got to make this, you know.
Taking the audience on a bit of a journey. Something. Yeah.
And so this went on, and I worked with her. And I'm not being scheduled for any storytelling until one day, well, I know it was. I think it was my 86th birthday was coming on. And I sent her a note. I said, I'm about to turn 86. Are you running out the clock? And she said, okay.
Better sooner than later.
Come on. We can't keep delaying this. I have to make my payments to French's mortuary or something, you know. So they
sent me another postcard.
So she scheduled me, and where was my first one? Somewhere I forget where it was now, but I got there. You know, they fly you in.
Wonderful.
They fly you into whatever city this was. It was a college town in Colorado. I can't remember just where.
Okay.
And there are four other storytellers, and then you have the producer and a couple of assistants, and they're there, and you tell your story, which by then you've been tinkering with for God knows how long. and then you all go out for dinner and you eat and drink and have a good time and bond.
Yes, I bet.
And they put you up in a really nice hotel in a nice area, so it's fine. You know, you're fun.
Yes.
I have a great time with them. And then there's the day of the performance. You know, you just wander around, do what you want to do, go sightseeing or go to a museum or weep quietly in your room or whatever, you know, whatever the mood is for this thing. And then you get to the theater, you go to the theater early, no sound check, and suddenly you're not at the cell with 50 people. You are in something like the chemo, only much larger.
Maybe like 1,000 people or
1,500. Sell out these things.
Yes, very popular.
It's very popular. Yes. And all of a sudden, oh my God. Whoa. I mean, this is scary.
Did you know that it was going to be that big of a place?
Well, theoretically, I did.
Yeah. It's different when you see the seats on.
Oh, boy. And there are going to be people out there. And then you gather backstage, and they have food back there. They also have wine back there. The last thing I need at that. Yeah. I mean, I would love to have a glass of wine, but no.
Get it loosened up a little bit.
No, we can't do that.
Yeah.
And then they have figured out the order in which you're going to appear. And you get up, and for 10 minutes, you can go to 12. You get to tell your story. And if my trouble is controlling my knees. They tend to shake a lot during it. It was scary. The mic is, you know, you can't get away from the mic. I would love to be able to wander around.
Got to keep it right.
But you have to keep it right there, you know.
Yes, yes.
Well, the thing is, and the lights go down, so you can't see people out there, but you can hear them. And it's almost like a living, breathing body out there.
Wow.
And then they start to respond. And then the blood really rushes, and it is a tremendous rush. They have started putting me on first on the program, because I get everybody laughing. Because it's a story about online dating in your 80s. I mean, who's not going to snicker at that one?
There you go.
And I roll with this, you know. They don't want to put you on the program next to the Holocaust survivor or, you know,
something like that, the serious ones,
because they do have some serious ones. And then it's over and you go out and celebrate and the next day you fly home and hope they'll call you again soon.
Yeah.
So I've done about a dozen of these now.
For the Moth?
London. I've done London a year ago. England, that is.
What are some of you know what? I wonder if I've heard you.
Not yet.
None of these that you've taped? Not yet.
Not yet. They have put my show in a book that just came out.
Right. They were going to do a book. Yeah.
Well, the book is out now, and I'm one of 50 storytellers out of the
thousands. Oh, my gosh.
And mine will be broadcast sometime, I think, the end of this year.
What, on the online dating one?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And just for those who are unfamiliar with The Moth, it is quite a sensation.
It's a
global type of storytelling outlet that has a super popular podcast where they literally do get speakers from around the world. I've heard this. So for you to not only, A, be selected to have to tell a story live, and you said six times now?
A dozen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
When they had their big fundraiser in New York.
This is like Sonya Dewing telling me she's doing roller derby. You're just dropping this in on me. This is great. This is amazing.
Yeah. 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 New York was terrific. That was their anniversary, 25th anniversary, and I was their opening act.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Stories to Tell podcast. Please subscribe and introduce your friends to the show. And if you have a story to tell, please reach out. It will be a pleasure to connect with you.